And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I surely thank you for joining us. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, except for the month of February, when we're coming to you on Sundays from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com as well as newspress.com, and we also are rebroadcast on Sundays from 3 to 4 p.m. on a2zen.fm. So we're almost doing a simulcast on A to Zen on Sunday. Here we are on, hard to believe, the 17th of February, and we're halfway through the month. Just celebrated Valentine's Day. A little bit later on, we'll talk with Beth McDonald, our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, to find out how that went and what to expect for the rest of the month and maybe into March. And we'll see what sign we're in, going from Aquarius to whatever the next sign is. And so we hope you'll stay with us. Quite an extraordinary time for my wife and I, as we have brought into our home a new child, if you will. I've been sharing with you over the course of the last few months the loss of my wife's dear partner and friend, companion, Connor, who died of a rattlesnake bite or some kind of a snake bite up at our home. He was her canine friend and companion and partner and just loved by everybody, and was so sad. Well, we were able to finally reach a point of bringing a new soul into our world. He is a beautiful 9-week-old, actually this weekend is 10 weeks old, King Shepherd Black. Very, 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 very dark brown, if you will. Beautiful boy by the name of Angus Liam McDonough. And so with that, you now know that we have sort of been able to move on. And it is quite an interesting time in our lives. But it's not the first time we've raised a puppy. We raised Connor from a pup as well. So it's great. It's trying. We're having a few sleepless nights only because, hey, he's got to get up and go do his business, and we are attentive to that. It's one of the things that we've learned, and I would assume that if you have children, it's the same way. You have to be, especially infants, be attentive to the cries and what they mean, and it's not easy to figure out, and we figured that it's one of three things. Either he needs to do his business, he's hungry, or he wants attention. He wants to get out and play a little bit. So it's quite interesting, and I will say that it is a lot of fun. With that said, we're going to move into our program today, and I think you're going to enjoy it. I think this is something that probably would have been very beneficial back in August and September of last year, during the very trying times. And that is the subject of having some kind of an anchor, something that would help us to get through those days and nights that we struggle through. Well, back in ancient history, there were things such as called touchstones. They were black stones marked with a streak of real gold that helped people build material wealth. Now, that is one use of these stones, and we're going to talk with our guest who is the author of the book, Touchstones, Stories of Living the 12 Gifts. We'll find out what those 12 gifts are. I'm not sure they're related to the 12 days of Christmas, but we'll find out. My guest is the author. She's also the author of The 12 Gifts, as well as other books, Charlene, and it's Costanzo. Is that correct?
That's correct, Richard.
All right, Charlene, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program, as well as for sharing your time with us. And this idea, I know that in this context, in terms of building material wealth, that's certainly something that we're all looking for, but also spiritual wealth and well-being. And I know that many people are going through a lot of trying times these days and sure could use some kind of, I'd like to use the term anchor, some kind of anchor point. Sometimes it's a phrase. Sometimes it's another person. But I sense that these touchstones are, they sort of serve that purpose as well. Is that a fair assessment?
It's interesting that you use the word anchor. Anchor is one of my favorite words, as is touchstones. I frequently use the term anchor activities because I think we so want to anchor our intentions to be more loving, to be more compassionate, to be successful, to be kind, whatever, we always have intentions. And they're powerful. But when we step out and we do something beyond our minds and we make some anchoring activity, you know, just because we're in the physical world, that just seems to, well, it anchors it, you know, and it makes it stronger. So, and I do think that just as using the word touchstones, which I think help us get in touch with the wealth that's in us, the strength, the beauty, the courage, compassion, hope, joy, talent, imagination, reverence, wisdom, love, faith, and there are many more. I focus on those 12. But all the, like the resources within us, when we remember them and we get in touch with them and we try to consciously use them every day, it really does help to enrich and empower us every day. And of course, help us through the challenging times.
Indeed. I know that there is what's called a worry stone. I'm sure you're familiar with them. You've seen them. We've all probably seen them in different stores. It's a little flat stone with an indentation for the thumb. And you carry it around in your pocket. And every time you feel like, you know, you're worrying or you're focused on something, maybe this helps to sort of distract you from that or get you back on track, recenter you. And I know people use all different other modalities. Some people use beads, you know, and so on and so forth. I mean, there's just it's quite extraordinary. And so I'm kind of curious as to how you came up with or chose touchstones as opposed to some of the other things that are out there. What was it that resonated with you?
Well, I've always loved the word. As I said, I love the word anchor. Being a writer, I do love words. but, you know, I love stones also so much. I have on my desk, you know, in fact, in my handbag, I carry a little Ziploc bag of colorful stones. I'm not a stone expert that I can tell you this is quartz, this is, you know, all the different names, but I love all the colors. And the reason why I do that, when I visit, I have visited many schools, shelters, prisons, hospitals, places throughout the country, and really the message of the 12 gifts of the five books, the whole collection, is to remind us that we're valuable. And after reading or, you know, talking about it or reading one of my books, the first few books take only 5 minutes each to read. I could maybe read one of them on the air today, the first one. But after reading that, I would love to do that, by the way, if you think that's that.
I am certainly open to that.
Well, for example, when I visit schools, I tell children, I wrote the 12 gifts of birth because I wanted my children to always know that they're valuable. And I'm here today to talk with you and read the story because I want you to always know you're valuable. But sometimes we forget. And sometimes we feel kind of like a plain old worthless rock, and I take a little, you know, little stone out. But then I have in a bag hidden, I have a fishbowl full of these colorful stones. And, you know, I make the point that when stones are tumbled and polished, underneath that plain, ordinary, worthless-looking surface, there's this beauty and richness, and we're all like that. We all have strength and value and beauty within us. So when I offer a stone everywhere I go, and that's why I even have them in my handbag, because if I'm on a plane or, I don't know, I start talking to somebody anywhere, and something we get into something that, you know, we connect in a personal way. You know, when people, I don't know if this happens to you, but sometimes when you're on, particularly on an airplane or waiting in an office somewhere, sometimes this wonderful thing happens and we connect with someone who up until that point was a stranger, and we look in their eyes and we open ourselves a little bit up to each other. And, you know, we realize how much alike we are. We have dreams, we have hurts. Everyone is facing some kind of issue always, whether it's a light one or a very deep one. Anyway, that's when I take out my stones and offer a stone. And there's two other messages in the, whether it's a fishbowl or a little bag of polished stones. When you look at the whole of them, they come in all different shapes, colors, and sizes, like us, and we're all valuable. And then when you look at the stone that you picked closely, you'll notice little nicks and scratches, flaws. And, you know, they're beautiful and they're not perfect. Another thing for us to remember, you know, we're not perfect, but we are beautiful and valuable and strong.
You know, you've touched upon something that I was elucidating with another guest about not too long ago. My early part of my career, I was working for a Christian radio station. And what was kind of frustrating for me was the message about who and what we were initially, and that we were nothing but lowly worms, that we were worthless, valueless. And then, of course, I start hearing the message, you know, the gospel story and so forth. And those two messages didn't ring true to me. They didn't match. They didn't mesh together. I thought, that doesn't make any sense. Why would this loving God sacrifice his son for something that had no value? It didn't make any sense. And that's when I kind of backed away from that, saying, no, we have to have had value. We must have been so important. And this is in the context of this message, that this is the only way that he could have shown how much he really, really cared about what he had created. And so I couldn't agree with you more, that I think that maybe that's kind of what's happened over the years, over the centuries, is that we've been beaten down so much by so many of these kinds of messages that we don't think, we don't believe that we have value unless somebody else tells us that we do. When in fact, we couldn't be more priceless than the most priceless stone, to use to use your metaphor, on the planet.
And I think it is critical that we all work on this within ourselves and work toward this shift again and again, coming back to realizing, you know, not that we're better than anyone. That's why I like to use the word valuable and mm-hmm. not special, you know, in schools or anywhere, to tell someone you're special, because that, I mean, not that I want to be picking apart words, but special can connote, you know, still there's that different, that we're different.
Right. Certain words are charged in a certain way.
It's important that we all realize that we're valuable. And really, within, inside of us, no one is lesser or greater than anyone else. Now, in the physical world, we see someone maybe more attractive on the outside, have more education, have wealth, have social status, have whatever, you know. But but inside, we all have access. It's like we have this wellspring within us. See, I also think they're not really our individual gifts. They're gifts that we all have access to. And it's the same well. You know, we're all connected to the source.
Yeah.
And to know that we share that, and we can go to that well, and there's no lack there. So whether people hear it in this form, there are so many forms out there today, as well as those other messages that continue to tell us we're not good enough and there's lack in the world. And I think it's important to just kind of tune that out, turn away from it, not with, well, for me, I feel it strongly, and I'm saying this for myself, because I can still get triggered with all that and get angry, and to just try not to be angry and judge it, but just be sort of sympathetic, compassionate about it. Just realize, well, it's been a song that's been sung for a long, long time in many ways, and we just want to start singing this other song. There's a book, a title of a book that I love. It's written, well, the title is Original Blessing, and I love that instead of Original Sin, to realize, you know, that we're all blessed, you know, and to focus on, yeah, we make mistakes, we're human, but, you know, put it on the beauty, put our focus on our beauty and our compassion, and be building that in ourselves, and kind of be like magic mirrors for one another and reflect that to each other.
Yeah.
Instead of what's wrong.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more in that respect. I'm curious as to how you started on this path. Where are you coming from, especially from a spiritual standpoint, in terms of where you are today?
Now, I grew up Catholic, and I remember in maybe about sixth grade, I learned that the meaning of Catholic with a lowercase c means universal. And that really struck me, and I remember walking to school, and I just always loved, I was fascinated. I passed several churches, you know, a Protestant church, I would walk by a synagogue, and, you know, I just thought, wow, God, I know, I always love to look for God everywhere, in the clouds, incense, you know, see a butterfly go by and just feel like, well, that's kind of a reminder of God, you know. And there was a really big tree that I passed, and I remember calling it the grandfather tree. See, I think children, young children, see the world with wonderment. I think wonder, my fourth book is, the title is The 13th Gift, and it's about that gift of wonder that we all have. But that's one that kind of gets often tarnished or worn away when we get older. And boy, when we can stir that up, and it's still in there, we have access to that too. Mm-hmm. But when we can go out and look at the day, remember to look up, you know, slow down and look at the sky, look at a sunset, look at a baby, look at your, is it Eugene Liam McDonough? Did I say?
Angus,
Liam McDonough. Look at a puppy and just, and say, wow, you know, how that stirs that within us. And you know what? I see all of these gifts like the colors in a rainbow. They're all, just like they're all aspects of light. All of these gifts, wonder, beauty, courage, compassion, they're all sort of shades of love.
Yeah. I have to say that when we first saw Angus, he was a small little puppy and just adorable, but very, you know, you could tell he was a little scared because, hey, this is all new. What's going on? Who are these people and what's happening here? Where's Mama? That kind of thing. And now that we have him home and he's acclimating into the system, and I still look at him and I go, this dog is going to be an adult in a very quick time, just because time goes by so quickly. And he's going to have a personality that is going to be such that he's going to be that protector. He's going to be that friend, that partner, especially for my wife, but for both of us, as well as to my dog, Makushla. And I even remember looking at Connor as an adult dog thinking, I remember what he was like with his own wonder at life, bounding about and so forth. And I guess the opposite of that wonder for us as humans is cynicism. We become jaded. We become cynical about the process of life, about everything that goes on around us. And sometimes what was it I heard not too long ago? Someone said that they were, to cheer themselves up, they were going to go to the pet store and get licked by puppies.
That's a great one way to do it, in a great way. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So when you started out on this particular path, because I was born and raised Catholic also, and universal, I learned that term as well, for Catholic small c. And so we lived next door to a family of nine, and they happened to be Mormons, which was never mind to me. I, you know, didn't make any difference to me, and they invited me to go to service one Sunday, and so I went. It was okay. I mean, you know, I didn't really pass much judgment on it, other than the fact that I thought, okay, now I don't have to go to Mass today. My mother had other plans on that and was not real happy that I had gone, and this was at that time. But for me, it was like, okay, well, if it's universal, then it has to be all-encompassing, that everybody is a part of this, even if it is a small c, you know, until I began to learn the less wonderful aspects, if you will, of universal from catechism. That's where they start to take the wonder out a little bit, I found. But I'm thinking that that's kind of one of the things that you're trying to teach us through these touchstones in particular, as well as through the 12 gifts, which, yes, I will have you, and I'm going to let you choose the one that you'll read, and I'll have you do that in the second half of our program. I want to let our listeners know, before we go much further, how they can get in touch with you, and that is through your website, which happens to be your name, Charlene, and it is pronounced Costanzo.
Costanzo. However, a simpler way to get there,
tell us.
You know, this fits in with what we're talking about, religion and paths to God. There are many paths that lead to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And to get to my website, an easier way to get there is simply the12gifts.com.
Ah, I like that. The 12
Easier to
gifts.
Remember. Yes.
Excellent, excellent.
And either using the numeral or the word, the12gifts.com.
Now, this is
By the way,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I can just mention, in case I forget later, so touchstones are big for me, and touchstones can be stories, objects, rituals, music, quotes, anything that gets us in touch with our center. I also, if someone goes to, when your guests go to my website, there's a place to sign up to receive each day, if one wishes, a daily, it's called Today's Touchstone, a little quote from many different sources, followed by a little bit of expanding on that.
Right, sort of an explanation.
And it's Today's Touchstone.
Putting it to use kind of thing. And I also noticed, too, and I have to say I was extremely excited at the time this happened, but I noticed, too, that and this is part of the process in terms of the touchstones, in terms of the gifts. The Arizona Diamondbacks used imagination to win the World Series in 2001. I was living in Phoenix at that time. I'm a native Phoenician and was very excited, to say the very least. I love the game of baseball. Never thought I would ever go to a major league game, let alone have one in my own hometown, let alone have one go to the playoffs, let alone have one go to the World Series, let alone have one win the World Series. So that was quite exciting for when I reached.
Oh.
Yeah, it was very cool. I mean,
so you lived in Phoenix then?
Yeah, at that time.
When I did.
Yeah.
Where
oh.
Did you say you went to one of the games?
I not to one of the World Series games, but I went to a couple, three games. I have to say that one of the greatest experiences that I had at, and I will always know it as Bob, the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
You know how when a kid is growing up in a town where they have a baseball team, and Dad takes the kid to his first ball game.
Yeah.
I took my dad to his, as far as I know, to his first ball game. And that was really cool.
Wow.
It was,
that is cool.
Yeah. And we walked around the stadium. He wasn't that interested in the game, which was okay. It was more just spending time with my dad. And we went into one of the restaurants that faced the stadium, and of course they had big screen TVs in there also for the game, and had a little bite to eat and chatted a little bit and watched the game, and it was really neat. So
that is cool. I'm picturing it. See, I'm using my imagination right now. I can see it, re-see it all. The pool that's there.
Oh yes,
pool,
yes.
Right, you know, outside one of the restaurants.
I always wondered how to get to that pool.
My husband and daughter, as you know, one of the stories, they were at the seventh game.
Oh. How exciting.
And, and I stayed home because I had just completed treatments for cancer.
Yes.
And I was really too weak to go. But I.
How interesting. My wife was at that same time also going through her chemo for cancer, literally at that same time. We were, she had been diagnosed in July, had the surgery in August, and went through chemo from September through the early part of January 2002, and it was that following December that we were married and went to Ireland for our honeymoon. But that was an extraordinary time, and my wife is not a sports fan. Openly admits she is not a sports fan, and that's fine. Yet she was willing to sit there and watch the game with me and enjoy, I guess, my enthusiasm and excitement. And it was a lot of fun. But it was tinged with that side note. And I want to talk a little bit about that with you in terms of what you experienced and what you went through. And where were the touchstones in your life at that time?
You know, I had just finished, I mentioned earlier, traveling, that I have traveled a lot, reading my first book, The 12 Gifts of Birth. My husband and I were living in a motorhome, and we had traveled literally. We gave up our home in Phoenix. We first went out, lived just in a motorhome, went to every state, and in the very last state where we flew to Alaska. We didn't drive there. But I touched the front of my throat, felt a lump, and knew that this was not supposed to be there anyway. But getting back to Phoenix, I was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I felt a lot of fear. And it struck me that I had just read this little story, which I'll read later. It's only 500 words, essentially telling everyone. And what I wanted to do is tell children and children of all ages, no matter who you are, no matter what we're facing, we have within us the strength, beauty, courage, so much power to face everything and to be able to survive and thrive and live well, you know. And I'm doing this inspirational talking, and then I said, aha, Charlene, can you walk your talk? Because I felt like I had been spun around, punched in the stomach, the rug pulled out from under me. I was told there was no cure. So, I did say, well, I'm going to go deeper into each of the gifts. And before I started treatment, my oncologist said to me, this is a time that calls for strength. Do what makes you strong. That was one of the things that helped me to go deeper into strength and really all of the gifts. But one thing that occurred to me, I remembered then that I had heard this story about Ivan Pavlov, mm-hmm. a scientist who lived before the discovery of penicillin. He had a very serious infection, life-threatening, and he instructed his assistant to go to the river and get a bucket of mud. And he sat in bed and he just closed his eyes and he kind of played in the warm mud. And what he was doing was going back, using his imagination, and going back into his childhood and remembering how much joy and peace and delight he felt when his mom would take him to the river and do the laundry and sing and tell him stories. And just by going back to that and feeling so much well-being, his body returned to homeostasis, fever broke, and he survived. Well, I realized, wow, I guess that was like an anchoring activity, a touchstone for him, because touchstones can be stories, activities, memory, you know, objects. Mm-hmm. And so I started to say, well, what can I do that's going to day by day return me to a place where I am feeling so peaceful and I'm empowered? And so I would smell suntan lotion, because as a child I didn't like mud, but I loved the sand, and I grew up near the New Jersey shore. So I used many things that would, aromatherapy and certain kind of music. I watched I Love Lucy to laugh, you know, many things that were really touchstones for opening up to joy and lightness and peace and compassion for myself. And that I believe all these gifts can help us heal.
And I know that those are paths that each one of us sometimes takes because it really does help. I know that, you know, for some it's certain types of music. Even if I'm not in a healing mode in terms of needing that, I like to watch stuff that makes me laugh. I'm not wanting to get into a lot of heavy stuff, heavy dramas and things of that nature. And cartoons. I love cartoons. I go into some of our more modern day cartoons knowing they're stupid. I know they're stupid, but I don't care because I want to laugh. I want to have some fun here. And I think that helps a lot. And of course, I get a lot of laughter out of our animals that we have, and I'm sure I'll get quite a bit of laughter even out of out of our new arrival, Angus, as well. We're talking with Charlene about her book, Touchstones, and it is plural, touchstones, because you can have more than one. And Charlene Costanzo is my guest. She's also the author of The 12 Gifts of Birth, but also just in general, The 12 Gifts. And Charlene, while we take this break, I'm going to ask you, if you would, to choose one of those short little, I think you said something like 500-word little books, pamphlets of sorts, and share that with us when we come back from our break. Can you do that?
I'd be delighted.
Great. And again, Charlene Costanzo is my guest. The title of the book is Touchstones, and I want you to give us that web address again, because I don't want to mess it up. I know that it has to do with the 12 gifts, so tell us that web address, and that's also where they can get that daily touchstone, if you will. Yes.
The address is the12gifts.com.
The12gifts.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay right where you are.
Stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. It's great having you with us. It's great having Charlene Costanzo with us, and her book is called Touchstones. And the subtitle, I'm going to tell you, is Stories for Living the 12 Gifts. And we have Charlene on the line to share with us from one of those 12 gifts that I think would probably fit someone who's listening right now. So, Charlene, I'm going to turn it over to you for the next couple of moments to share that particular story.
Okay, this is actually my first book, the first book in the collection of five, The 12 Gifts of Birth. And when we're done, I'll tell you there's a story behind it, which I'd love to share. So I invite you to listen with the ear of your heart and the heart of your inner child. Once upon a time, a long time ago, when princes and princesses lived in faraway kingdoms, royal children were given 12 special gifts when they were born. You may have heard the stories. 12 wise women of the kingdom, or fairy godmothers as they were often called, traveled swiftly to the castle whenever a new prince or princess came into the world. Each fairy godmother pronounced a noble gift upon the royal baby. As time went on, the wise women came to understand that the 12 royal gifts of birth belonged to every child born anywhere at any time. They yearned to proclaim the gifts to all children, but the customs of the land did not allow that. One day, when the wise women gathered together, they made this prophecy. Someday, all the children of the world will learn the truth about their noble inheritance. When that happens, a miracle will unfold on the kingdom of earth. Someday is near. Here is the secret they want you to know. At the wondrous moment you were born, as you took your first breath, a great celebration was held in the heavens, and 12 magnificent gifts were granted to you. The first gift is strength. May you remember to call upon it whenever you need it. The second gift is beauty. May your deeds reflect its depth. The third gift is courage. May you speak and act with confidence and use courage to follow your own path. The fourth gift is compassion. May you be gentle with yourself and others. May you forgive those who hurt you and yourself when you make mistakes. The fifth gift is hope. Through each passage and season, may you trust the goodness of life. The sixth gift is joy. May it keep your heart open and filled with light. The seventh gift is talent. May you discover your own special abilities and contribute them toward a better world. The eighth gift is imagination. May it nourish your visions and dreams. The ninth gift is reverence. May you appreciate the wonder that you are and the miracle of all creation. The tenth gift is wisdom. Guiding your way, wisdom will lead you through knowledge to understanding. May you hear its soft voice. The 11th gift is love. It will grow each time you give it away. The 12th gift is faith. May you believe. Now you know about your 12 gifts of birth, but there is more to the secret that the wise women knew. Use your gifts well, and you will discover others. Among them, a gift that is uniquely you. See these noble gifts in other people, and be ready for the miracle to unfold as the prophecy of the wise women comes true. The end.
Mm. One thought before you give us the backstory. All 12 of these gifts, as you are reading them off, come across to me as childlike. To use a quote, if I can, once again, Jesus said that unless you come to me as little children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And it seems to me that these 12 that you've listed off, and I know that there are many more, are absolutely qualities that children, before they're taught, they have.
They have. Oh, absolutely. I have 2.5-year-old twin grandbabies. And a boy and a girl, and it just, I've known that, what you just said, I believe that and I get to see it every time I see them. You know, they're amazing, the love, the caring, the wonderment, the, just all that. I do feel very strongly that it's true. We do all come into the world with, these are not like options, upgrades or anything. They're like standard, built into every one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always there, even if no matter what may happen, how much armor we kind of put on in life and masks and kind of hide some of this, but it's always there, accessible for us. But another story comes to mind. That story that I just that I read that is inspired a little bit by the Sleeping Beauty story. In that and other fairy tales, there are many where the fairy godmothers do bring royal gifts to the royal prince or princess. And really, there is such an kind of an understanding that there are the haves, you know, those that are sort of more worthy, more deserving than all the children of the world. So there really is truth in that story. But in the Sleeping Beauty story, I don't know, girls know these fairy tales probably better than, you know, boys are generally are not as interested in them. But in that, the part of the story goes that there was a fairy godmother who came to the christening of this princess, and she actually put a curse on the princess because she was insulted by the king or something. But anyway, she said that she was going to prick her finger on a spinning wheel, and it was going to be a poison needle, and she would die. But another princess, fairy godmother, said, well, she won't die. She's just going to fall asleep. What will awaken her is true love. The kiss or is true love.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm amazed with that because I think about that simple story, and yet, you know, no matter here, and she does, by the way, the king has all the spinning wheels in the land destroyed, but naturally one is in the castle in an attic somewhere, you know, one is missing, and she finds it one day, and sure enough, she is curious, and she touches the needle and is poisoned and falls asleep. And but I think of how much, here is a powerful, loving king. This king loved his dear princess daughter, and you know, was the most powerful person in the land, in the outer world. And he could not prevent his child from being wounded. And the point that I see in that is, you know, even the most loving parents, no matter how well we try to raise a child, things are going to happen that are going to, you know, just by being human, we all get wounded. Things happen and we start to feel not good enough about ourselves. So even if we don't hear these messages that the world is saying or certain religions say, there's just so much out there where children are very early on in life, just the way psychology works and all, where they'll think they may feel abandoned if mommy goes to work, or we may feel, you know, we experience these things that then we carry them through in life. And it's interesting because it is true love that awakens us.
Mm.
So we kind of fall asleep to our birthright inheritance, the beauty, the wonder, the strength, all that we have. And then at some point, the rest of our lives is about waking up.
Yeah, and I've often wondered why we can't allow our children to stay awake from the get-go. Why we have to put them to sleep. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know.
And then go through that process of waking up again.
I think about this so much now that I love my daughter so much. By the way, I wrote that story for my two children when they were 16 and 17 years old. I had been my husband and I were young parents, and I had this experience one day while I was just putting dishes away in my kitchen and the kids weren't home from school yet, and I realized 16 and 17 years had passed so quickly. Where did the time go? And just like you realized with your Connor and then your new puppy, I heard you refer to the different stages. You know, there's the puppy stage, there's the adult stage, and
mm-hmm.
But I realized, wow, all those, the earlier stages, it went by so quickly, and they're ready to go out into the world. And I said to myself, have I been a good mom? And my answer was kind of yes, but, because I'm just learning about unconditional love myself.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, what can I do now to, I don't know, reinforce, you know, let them know something. I didn't even know what it was that I wanted them to know about themselves. But I knew they were going to college or going out into the world. They would face things. I wanted them to know to always be compassionate with themselves, to believe in themselves. And I ended up, anyway, the story that I just read, it came to me in a dream. And I first made a handmade book for my children, handmade, hand-sewn, and gave it to them. And I wished that it was something I had been telling them from the time they were born. But I started then. And after giving it to them, I realized, you know, this is a message that is potentially powerful for many children. I want to get it published. I tried. It got rejected again and again. I eventually published it myself 10 years later. It did extraordinarily well, won many awards, and it started selling really well. To date, it has sold almost three quarters of a million copies.
Wow.
And agents and publishers started to call me, and it was picked up by a major publisher. It's available through HarperCollins now.
Hmm.
But that's the story behind that book.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's when we start taking a look at our own development, the process that we go through, or again, the development of whoever's around us, man or beast, you know, either way, you know, I still see, I could still see the young pup in the adult. And sometimes we need to look in the mirror and really imagine or try to remember the small child that we once were. I mean, I have pictures of me when I was a little kid, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, that kind of thing. And my parents kept a little baby book. And I remember the wonder that I had before school started, you know, or when we had summer vacation and the things that we did. And even some of the dreams. I still recall one or two of those childlike dreams that I had back then. And we lose touch. And I know that there was a catchphrase that was used, get in touch with the inner child. And it's not so much from my perspective, and I'll have you elucidate on this, it's not just a question of getting in touch with the inner child. It's like that child is on the inside and the outside, but we don't see it a lot of times because of the adult world that we have created around ourselves.
You know, one of the stories, I agree with you very much. One of the stories in Touchstone Stories for Living, the 12 Gifts, in the beauty section, is about a woman who, one thing that she did to help heal herself was, as an adult, when she really felt that she had very strict parents, and the joy was kind of worn away. She was taught to be very serious and be very practical, and she did a number of things. But one thing she did was she found and framed a photo of herself when she was 4 years old. Looking at it, she could see that she had been a bright-eyed, beautiful little girl. That picture, along with affirmations, journaling, and other tools, helped Zoe to overcome feelings of shame and unworthiness. She says, I had to bring back to life that spirited little girl I once was. Every day for years, I spoke heartening words to the little girl in the picture and to the grown woman in the mirror. I still do. An amazing thing in the story, this woman, who is a teacher, she retired recently, but she, she took parts of broken, like a kaleidoscope has little bits of broken bits of color, you know, plastic glass. And when you look through it and you look through it and raise it toward the light, all these beautiful patterns emerge over and over again. And her story reminds me of a kaleidoscope. Like, she took a lot of little pieces of herself that seemed broken. And what she did was start a program for girls in her school. Teenage girls, she had heard that teenage girls going from middle school to high school, their self-esteem often plummets for some reason, even if they're not in, you know, neglectful or abusive situations. It's just a time that something naturally seems to happen to challenge girls a lot. And she wanted to make sure that they're really their self-worth was nurtured and protected, and she started a program every year, a weekend of helping the girls just to be so empowered and see their gifts. And she just made wonderful. She gave them many tools to use for the rest of their life. And that grew. Other schools picked up on this. So one thing I love about that story is not only did Zoe take some of the things that had been challenging in her own life and worked and, you know, helped to heal and grow and enrich herself, but she then, you know, took that and made a tremendous contribution to the world with it for other girls. And we can each do that. You know, we all have, just like we have our wonderment stories, we can take our hurts and our times of embarrassment or, you know, every situation we can learn and sort of like the stone, you know, turn it into a polished stone. In fact, just like stones when they're tumbled and polished, I think like the times that we stumble and we're tumbled about in life a little bit, that does or it can bring forth more of our beauty.
I think you're right about that. I'm sitting here as you're sharing this thinking, I just happened to watch an episode of How It's Made, and they were actually showing how a kaleidoscope was made with all those little bits and pieces of things that are put in the disc, and how very cool those things look. Matter of fact, there is a shop, you may have even been there when you lived in Arizona, up in a small town called Jerome, there is a kaleidoscope store. Very good. And they have one, the one that I really liked was the one they have sitting outside. And it doesn't have that disc of pieces. It's pointed at a pot filled with multicolored flowers. And it's in the sunlight. And so when you turn it, because of the mirrors, it changes colors. I just thought that was such a neat concept for a kaleidoscope.
It's a beautiful metaphor, too. Just like a regular kaleidoscope can be a metaphor for, you know, how we can take broken parts, lift it to the light, and see harmony and beauty. That is a reminder to, again and again, be willing to see differently. You know, and I think that's another thing that would be so important in today's world, that if we realize, you know, we all have our own unique way of seeing. Not one of us sees either with our eyes or perceives kind of the world to be a certain way. And we speak the same language, and we can say we agree or we can say we disagree. But I think we just need to realize we don't all see the same thing and be willing to sort of step over in different ways or use metaphors like that and say, am I willing to see the world as best I can? How do you see it? Please tell me. And I won't get it completely because I'm in my own experience, but if we can understand each other, listen a little bit better, and respect, you know, use this reverence for one another and ourselves and compassion, that is what is going to not only bring more peace and healing to us, but we'll advance more when we're not in a place of fear and anger. We're so much more creative. You know, we're able to see creative solutions to everything. So any of the things that we see as problems in our personal lives or in the world, as much as we can reduce fear. In a moment, I'd like to share a little activity for an anchoring activity for that intention of reducing fear.
Mm-hmm.
But when we do that, we're more likely to have the aha experiences of more understanding, or solutions will come to us. How do we get that job? Or how do we make more money? Or how do we improve this relationship? How do we, whatever it is we're facing.
Mm. You know, going back to the metaphor of the kaleidoscope, think about it. The pieces of glass and other colored beads and whatever it is that are in that little disc at the end of the kaleidoscope that you look at through the triple mirror process, those pieces don't change. They're exactly the same pieces no matter how many times you spin that disc. But that's the point. If you keep spinning the disc, the picture keeps changing.
Wow, I love it. You added another dimension to the wonderful metaphor. And that reminds me, we can't change whatever's happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like those little pieces. And sometimes whatever happened yesterday or in our childhood or 5 years ago, whatever, you know, the hurts, the wounds, or whatever we're facing right now. The first thing is to accept, okay, this is it. But then how do I kind of treat it like one of those little pieces in the kaleidoscope and mix it in with other stuff and maybe look at it in a different way? And, you know, something is going to be presented to me that I'm going to see opportunity in it. But it's true. The pieces, they don't change.
Yeah. I know that we also sometimes we forget our previous successes. I'm not saying linger there, but for example, and I'll go ahead and use this as an example. My wife has raised 4 Siberian Huskies many years ago from puppies. We brought in a puppy, basically a year old, my dog, into the family and raised her, and she's turned out really well. We brought into our household Connor, who was only a few months old, and now we've brought Angus into our household. And the strange thing is that both my wife and I are a little nervous about this time, even though we've done it before, and they turned out great. And of course, maybe we've talked with too many people, but there also are a lot of people that we've talked with who said, oh, no, you guys, based upon what you've shared, you guys are loving, you know, animal lovers, and you're going to be great, and the dog's going to turn out fabulous, and so on and so forth. And sometimes I think we forget that
exactly.
we succeeded before. We did this whole thing once before. Why do you think you won't be able to succeed now?
Right, right. And that is, that is one of the reasons why we want to start everyone. There's great potential benefit by everyone having their own collection of touchstone stories. At least one story for each of the gifts, for strength, beauty, courage, compassion, talent, and many other things. But mm-hmm. our the times in our life when we face some challenge, some struggle, and we triumph, you know, and then what was it that brought us through? You know, what the creativity. Now, I would imagine for you, you mentioned you love to laugh, a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Your humor probably carried you through so many things. But when we have specific anecdotes, and then we remember them, it's like holding a stone in our hand and anchor it and using it as a worry stone or something that just reminds us, I do have strength, you know, mm-hmm. it empowers us. Holding a story of success or forgiveness or and something that's healing, empowering in our minds and in our hearts just helps us to be in touch with that kind of that inner resource that we want to be using. So when you're faced with having a new puppy and being unsure, or you know, a new baby or a new job or, you know, faced with a diagnosis of something, it is precisely in those times when to have a collection of our own touchstones, it just lifts us, it puts us into a whole different energy.
Yeah. We've had storytellers on this program not only share stories, but share the importance of telling stories and all in that context. So I, because you fall into that category, you are a storyteller. Why, from your perspective, are stories so important in our lives and that we need them? We absolutely need them, whether they're true or not, especially like Aesop's fables. Those are just stories.
You know, because stories speak to us, we hear the wisdom, they resonate with us in our hearts, and somehow in our whole body, it's like a visceral experience. We hear a story and the truth in us resonates, it's like a tuning fork or something, and stuff starts to hum in us when we hear a story, especially, I think, I like to listen to uplifting, funny stories with really good energy, not things that are going to bring me down or resonate with lower kind of things in me. But because all stories will do that. You know, they resonate mm-hmm. with what is within us. So, you know, another story came to mind. It's not in my book, but it's one thing that happened when I was in California on that tour throughout the country 12 years ago, reading the 12 Gifts of Birth. One place I stopped to read the book was at a girl's, like a prison, a detention home, a locked facility for teenage girls. And I read that little story, The 12 Gifts of Birth, and one of the young women started yelling at me, "You got me, you got me." And she started to yell, and then she just broke down and cried. And then she explained that a lot of people come in and talk to them and try to tell them using just like into their heads, telling them, make something of yourself. You are worthy. You want to get on the right path. And she's able to just tune it all out. But what happened when she started hearing, once upon a time, a long time ago, she just listened to the story, and she said the story got in. You know, that's mm-hmm. it. Stories touch us, touch our hearts. They get in, and they just enter us. You know, and we have a different experience with a story than with, like, a theory.
Yeah. I usually offer this particular disclaimer at the end of my program, and that is that you need to be very careful what you listen to. You need to be very careful what you take in because you can't untake it. So in listening to this program, regardless of what program it is, if you've listened to it, it's too late. Now you have to deal with it. I don't give that at the beginning of the program. I usually give that at the end because then it's too late. Now you have to deal with it. And quite honestly, that's why it is so important to be so mindful, I think. And that's what you're saying. I have to say that as a kid growing up watching different television programs and specifically one in particular, Little House on the Prairie, I always wound up in tears at the end.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a story. I didn't know whether it was true or not, but, you know, television was fantasy. I mean, that's, you know, and there was nothing real in that respect, although, you know, you could relate to what was going on with these kids and with these adults and the struggles and the pioneer days and so forth. And we go through those same, I think that's what happens is we realize that we have a connection that even though we're not living in the pioneer days, or we're not living in outer space, or wherever the story's taking place, we're having the same kinds of experiences.
The mind, and very often in our imagination, within our body, our bodies don't know the difference whether it's real or not. So we do want to be careful what we're thinking and feeling, because this was very important to me when I was facing cancer and going through treatments. I realized that what I was choosing to do each day, think, feel, all my activities, what I was eating, everything was shaping, was very much influencing the quality of that day and influencing my tomorrow and shaping really all my tomorrows, the rest of our life. So without making, I don't think we want to be like afraid of, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, I saw something, a commercial went on, it just scared, or something, I saw something and now it's in there.
Right.
We don't want to make ourselves crazy over
it.
But be discerning what we choose. And if you see something, you think, you know what, I'm starting to feel icky listening to this, watching this, just turn it away. I don't want to forget. Earlier I said something about fear. I started using this when I was facing cancer. By the way, there's no evidence after all the treatments, even in my bone marrow, all the results said no evidence of cancer, and I'm really grateful for that.
Wow.
And I do want to mention, for anyone listening, if you've heard it, I know people who even lived many, many years with pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm.
At least one person has achieved a cure from every type of cancer. But with facing fear, I would wake up some mornings, and even with all the positive things I was doing, I would wake up again, and, for a moment, it was like I forgot. You wake up, and then it's like, oh, yeah, cancer cells are in my body. But I would, when I felt the fear, rather than deny it, and what we may feel fear about something in our personal lives or in the world, first just let it be. And the way that I did this an anchoring activity, is I went to my freezer, I got a piece of ice, and I hold the ice cube in the palm of my hand and just let it rest there and have it symbolize fear. When it's, fear is a lot like ice. It kind of locks, seizes us up, and it's kind of paralyzing. But I would let it be with kind of compassion for it, and just with the intention that I'm going to let it be. I'm either going to deny it, I'm not going to try to yell at it or run away from it, stuff it. Let it be, but have the intention that it simply softens and melts away. And I would take that and put it into a little cup. And usually, just with that intention, that just like that is going to soon become, transform into water, that the energy of my fear will transform into something else. I find that simple activity very helpful. So maybe some of your listeners may want to try that when they feel fear about something.
Absolutely. Anything that we can do to shift out of that. And yet, of course, I also hear, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. Well, that's a wonderful phrase, but, it's like, well, I don't really want to go there. But, there are times when, we find ourselves. I know what you went through because I watched my wife go through the chemotherapy, and I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. That is from my perspective, that is just some nasty stuff. And there were times when I was concerned that she wouldn't survive the chemo. It's like the cancer was the lesser of two evils at that point. But she made it through. She has been free of it for 11, 12 years too.
That's right. We went through it at the same time. Please give her my warmest regards and blessings and best wishes.
I will. But I have to say too that it also it is something that again we're all facing various challenges in our lives, and I have to say that, and I can still say this, I can still honestly say this, I have found myself, interestingly enough, in the right place at the right time throughout my life. Things just just seem to flow, but it only flows in my mind when I let go of the process. It was, and I'll share with you something that happened with us. Our listeners have heard this a number of times when we decided to move from Phoenix to Santa Barbara. Now, I'm sure, Charlene, that if you and or your husband had lost your jobs, you would have just been out of your mind in fear what are we going to do? We have these kids, and what's going to happen now? And we're going to lose the house, and you know, the whole waterfall starts to come down. I have to tell you that when my wife and I lost our jobs in 2006, I had no fear. I wasn't worried in the least. Now, did I have a plan? No. But for whatever reason, it was like at that particular point in time, even though I didn't know what we were going to do, I just felt like, you know, we're going to be fine. And she even came to me one evening and she says, I'm scared. I feel like we're on the edge of a precipice. Well, I've been through so many programs, personal growth programs and workshops and seminars, and interviewed folks such as yourself over the years, and talked with so many different people who are in the personal growth and self-help fields in spirituality and metaphysics. The one message came through that I shared with her is, of all these people that I've associated with, they all say the same thing. When you come to a cliff, you do two things. You jump and you trust. And that's what we did. And here we are today, 7 years later. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to go back to that and say, oh, that's right, I'm supposed to jump and trust. But, you know, it's like, well, forget the but, just jump. Put your butt out there, jump.
But if ever the fear comes up, anything in the future, that is a touchstone for you. See, oh, remember that time?
Yeah.
And look where, you know, things got even better.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like the gift or that energy, the resource of hope and faith are very strong in your life. You know, the energy, they're just very present in your consciousness.
But it's not
trust in what is unfolding.
But I'm curious. I'll ask you this question. It's not enough to just have some kind of false hope. Oh, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Don't worry. It's going to be okay. That's not what you're talking about in that context, though.
No. And we have to be very authentic, honest with ourselves. And, you know, we're being human. We are going to experience every emotion. It's part of being here. It's kind of like putting a puzzle together. You know, we're going to experience all the pieces.
Yeah.
And, but it's okay. Be with what is. Let it be. And know that this, too, will change. But, well, for me, I do find, though, that what helps me to be present with what is, breathe, stay present, and then use, for me, you know, the touchstones, because it helps me in the meantime.
Mm.
You know, what touchstones can be, I like the stories, music, quotes, affirmations.
Yeah.
You know, my today's touchstone, a recent one, is there is within us, within each one of us, a potential for goodness beyond our imagining. For giving, which seeks no reward, for listening without judgment, for loving unconditionally. That is from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Mm.
And what follows that is, may the best that is in us blossom in many ways as we live more and more mindfully of this place and from this place within us. And I think when we, the more that we just remember, oh yeah, these gifts are within us, sometimes we're just remembering it, we're not feeling it yet, but in a little while, you know, we open to it again.
Yeah. Before we wrap up the program, I have three final questions for you. Who is Charlene Costanzo?
Wow. A child of God. I don't know how to answer that. Who am I? I'm feeling resistance to answer it and say anything. You know, I am. I'm alive. I'm present. I'm experienced. I'm here.
Well, this isn't a test.
Oh, I know, but I guess this consciousness that where I was trying to be and within my heart, in my soul. But if you want me to describe, like, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a writer, I'm...
No, there is no prescribed answer. There
okay.
is no right or wrong
okay.
answer. It's whatever you give, and that's a wonderful answer. What do you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
Oh, I love to share the tools that I experience. You know, every time I hurt, I'm afraid, I come up against something, I say, well, how do I, you know, I go back to these 12 gifts, and how do I use them, just as I did with facing cancer? How, like, what toy or tip or tool, what anchoring activity, what helps me to emerge, to actually heal and grow beyond it. So I love to experience those things, have aha experiences, and then share them. And not say to people, oh, you should try this or, you know, whatever, but just say, oh, look what I found, like my little polished stone. Hey, would you like it? Do you want to try it? I like to share.
And finally, how powerful are we?
Beyond what we can imagine.
I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your stories with us here on the program. It's been wonderful to have you on the show and to delve into this area of stories and touchstones. And again, it's just been fabulous.
Oh, for me too. Thank you so much, Richard.
I want to remind our listeners that if you're listening to the radio program, there's more. If you're listening to AtoZen.fm, there's more. This program continues on beyond what you've already heard. I want you to go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and click on the link to the audio file of this interview with Charlene Costanzo. And we encourage you to check out her website. That website, once again, is it The 12 Gifts?
The12gifts.com.
I got it. The12gifts.com. The book is Touchstones. Again, the subtitle, Stories for Living the 12 Gifts. And Charlene, I want to thank you so much. It's been great, and we look forward to having you back again. And if you do find yourself in the area of Santa Barbara, please look us up, give us a call, and we'll sit down and we'll do a face-to-face interview.
I would love it. Santa Barbara's so beautiful. Well, blessings to you, your wife, your puppy, and to your listeners.
Thank you so much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.